Hello.
Podcast Network Asia. You are listening to the first of a three-part episode on the life and death of 80s ill-fated starlet, Pepsi Paloma, on the last 24 hours.
It's a sordid story straight out of a movie. A sensational unsolved mystery so familiar to many Filipinos that we can name the main characters with the littlest of known facts about what happened. That, in 1985, a young actress committed suicide 3 years after she accused three popular comedians of allegedly drugging and gang raping her. It's been 35 years since the death of Delia Dueñas Smith, an actress who first captivated fans in what people referred to back then as a bold star during the soft drink beauty phase of Philippine cinema. Along with a coterie of other pop drink named starlets, she starred in several borderline porn films as Pepsi Paloma. The movies were very popular at the time, but ultimately left little significant influence on local cinema. She could have easily just faded out of people's collective consciousness as the years passed on. Her career and filmography, a mere footnote during the volatile martial law days in the country. Instead, her story lives on in song, opinion pieces, and blogs. Most of all, it lives online, where her tragic existence and death is constantly given renewed life, giving fresh virtual voice to many of the questions that have dogged her story from the very beginning. Did she really commit suicide? Why weren't her alleged rapists further investigated, even after they publicly admitted to the error they have committed against her? Was her alleged ordeal a showbiz gimmick? Is it all fake news? Most of all, why, after all these years, are we still so captivated and fascinated with her story? What's driving people to want to know more? And why can't we just let her story rest in peace? In this three-part series of The Last 24 Hours, we revisit the short-lived life of Delia, not so much as to make sense of her death, because nothing about the sudden and senseless death of a vulnerable young girl will ever make sense. Neither will our retelling shed any more light to the many mysteries that surrounded her life from 1982 to 1985, but rather to gain an understanding of our own curiosity into her tragic story, to discover in the void her death left behind what powerful force sucks anyone who dare look in. A force that challenges us to look for answers, to find the truth, and make it impossible for us to ever forget that once upon a time, Pepsi Paloma lived. Ray de la Cruz, a flamboyant optometrist who fancied himself as a genius star builder, knew a good thing when he saw it. It was 1980, and Tita Esther, a known talent scout, had just introduced him to a fresh-faced, half-American young girl from the province of Northern Samar named Delia. Abandoned at a young age by her American father, Delia was being raised by a struggling single mother along with four other siblings. The dark-haired, doe-eyed beauty with a distinctive cleft chin radiated innocence, tinged with hungry desperation. De La Cruz decided almost immediately that she was going to be his next big thing. In 1981, she made an appearance in a movie by then-emerging film auteur Celso Ad Castillo, a film called Brown Emmanuel, where she caught everyone's attention by appearing fully nude. It was her acting debut. She was 14 years old. Seizing on an opportunity, Ray repackages her image and relaunches her as Pepsi Paloma, one of four equally underaged soft drink beauties that included Coca Nicolas, Mirinda Manibog, and Sarcy Emmanuel. The gimmicky moniker was a success, and the group starred in many low-budget, softcore porn films, which further strengthened De La Cruz's reputation as a controversial star maker of a certain type. Barely out of her teens, Pepsi became the lone breadwinner of her family, supporting her mother and siblings with her budding film career at a time when most girls her age were worrying about pimples and high school crushes. Though her filmography of suggestively titled movies left little to the imagination, from Virgin Island, Naked People, to Room 69, she often held her own. acting alongside a few reputable character actors, sometimes at the direction of critically acclaimed filmmakers. Pepsi's on-screen presence hinted at a promising future in show business, one that will no longer require her to bare her body or simulate sex scenes, a future where she will not be known as a bold star, but rather as a dramatic actress. She certainly had the resilience to make it happen. It's all there, behind her eyes, where she hides a kind of courage honed by years of poverty, fear, and sadness. Within her litany of tragedies, she could harness affecting performances that could have won her many acting awards, star in celebrated indie films, maybe even represent the country in an international film festival or two. She never had that chance. On May 31st, 1985, she was found dead in her apartment of an apparent suicide by hanging. She was 19 years old. When news of her death came out, people's immediate reaction went in either one of two ways. Either you were of the opinion that the death and the manner by which it happened made complete tragic sense. The poor girl had been through too much. How can anyone survive the past 5 years of her life without wounds that leave permanent, ugly scars? Or did you think, was it really suicide? Or was she murdered? But why would even suspect foul play? After all, according to the officer in charge of her case, identified in newspaper reports as a PFC Willy Borgogna, all the evidence point to a clear-cut case of suicide. He based his conclusion on two things. One, the condition by which they found her body. She was found by her boyfriend, half-brother, and two aides hanging in her closet on a 3-inch-thick, 36-inch-long cotton sash, and the contents of her diary, of which she allegedly expressed that she was depressed because of monetary problems. Thus, no other known attempt was made by the Quezon City Police to conduct further forensic investigation of the scene. No verification of the authenticity of Pepsi's diary and its contents was ever carried out. Neither was there any other mention of just how Pepsi managed to hang herself. Without full transparency and significant lack of investigative effort from the police, public doubt took hold, and many have started filling in the gaps with their own answers and theories into what really happened. For a hanging death to be considered a homicide rather than a suicide, a combination of the following conditions are considered to exist: binding marks or injuries under the larynx, scratch marks on the bindings, and the presence of significant trauma on the skin of the neck. According to MedPageToday.com, a typical suicide hanging fold elevates either to the back and the side behind the ears, and unless the ligature or binding is very tight, there will be a gap where it is not pressed against the skin. In contrast, a strangulation fold is horizontal, generally encircling the neck, and there is often traumatic injury to the back of the neck where the tightening force was applied. However, in the absence of forensic information regarding Pepsi's death, we take a look at another infamous, more recent suicide suspected murder case, the case of convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. On the morning of August 10, 2019, disgraced businessman Jeffrey Epstein was found unresponsive in his New York City jail cell, kneeling with a strip of bedsheet wrapped around his neck. The sheet was tied to the top of his bunk. Even before the autopsy was released, there were already reported irregularities. The removal of Epstein's body from his cell was a violation of protocol, as the Bureau of Prison mandates that a suicide scene be treated with the same level of protection as any crime scene in which a death has occurred. Consequently, a prison personnel also failed to photograph Epstein's body as it was found. A former inmate also described the prison sheets as paper level, meaning not strong enough to support Epstein's body. The New York Medical Examiner ruled his death a suicide by hanging, although Epstein's lawyers challenged that conclusion. A separate investigation was carried out, and the family hired their own pathologist, Michael Baden. On October 30th, 2019, Baden issued a report stating that Epstein's neck injuries were much more consistent with homicidal strangulation than suicide. He stated that Epstein had two fractures on the left and right sides of his larynx, specifically the Adam's apple, as well as a fracture on the left hyoid bone above the Adam's apple. In particular, Baden claimed that Epstein's hyoid bone was broken in a way indicative of strangulation from behind. Although other medical practitioners have disputed Baden's claims, including popular CNN medical correspondent Sanjay Gupta, public opinion on Epstein's real cause of death had already generated much skepticism and spawned multiple conspiracy theories. As for Pepsi, we've yet to learn of any more forensic details regarding the exact cause of her death. At the time, no other information about her death was ever released to the public, and in spite of persistent interest in her case, an official autopsy report has not materialized, if indeed one was ever conducted. The only existing item that could possibly provide any answers are the grim black and white photos of her frail, childlike body taken at the morgue. The grainy photos splashed on the front pages of the dailies at the time of her death are our only look into Pepsi's final moments. You can find two different images of it online. One is taken from the top of her head, just off the side. The white sheet is pulled all the way up to her shoulders. In the other photo, you can see the significant dark marks around her neck, starting from the base all the way to the top of her neck as she is cradled by a grieving, unknown figure.
Listen to episode 2 of the Pepsi Paloma Enigma on the last 24 hours, where we take a closer look at Pepsi's diary and mental health, two of the main factors that police claim contributed to Pepsi's suicide.
Don't miss out on new episodes. Like, subscribe to The Last 24 Hours, or follow the podcast on Facebook at Historia Ni Jet, where you can get in touch, tell me your thoughts, suggest cases, or just say hello. I'll do my best to get back to you.
The views and opinions expressed by the podcast creators, hosts, and guests do not necessarily reflect the official policy and position of Podcast Network Asia. Any content provided by the people on the podcast are of their own opinion and are not intended to malign any religion, ethnic group, club, organization, company, individual, or anyone or anything.